A huge shout out of thanks to our major sponsor, Pertec. If you have Pertec on your team, they will never let you down. Visit Pertec at pertec.com.au. And for all your travel needs, make sure you visit our great friends at Tripadeal, tripadeal.com.au.
Welcome, team. I am so excited, Stephen Crichton. This has been a long time coming, brother. I think we've been talking about jumping on this potty for 3 years.
Yeah. Ever since the start.
Yeah. High in demand. It's been hard to get you until we've finally locked you away in 27 Project in this nice setup. That it's nice and local to you. They're doing some awesome things out here in the West, which is an area you're so proud of. I want to go there with you. I want to go your big moments. I want to go how you grew up. I want you to share little lessons along the way that may accelerate a career of a young kid that's watching now, because, Stephen, I've seen it firsthand with you, and I've loved it when we've worked together. We had quite a few years together at the Penrith Panthers. We've had time together in Origin camps, and I love how much you inspire the next generation. But I also know how much it means to you, especially when you talk about kids from the area. I remember even when I first met you, before you were a rock star, you were doing things for kids in this area. So we definitely have to go there. The aim of this podcast, mate, is to help people. Teachers, coaches, trainers, players, leaders, business people, whoever, they just take little bits of wisdom from you. Even though you're quite young, you have a very mature head on your shoulders that I know in an unscripted chat, you'll deliver some gold here. I know it. So thanks for your time. Thanks for your time. I really appreciate it, mate. So could you just – let's just start with growing up. Let's get to know you a little bit for the listeners, and then we'll get into the elite level stuff where you're at now.
Yeah. Born overseas in Samoa, born there, stayed there for a year and a bit, and mum and dad had a decision to try and move to Australia. From Samoa, we moved to NZ, stayed there for a year and a bit again, and then, they made the decision to come to Australia. When we got to Australia, we didn't have a house, so we stayed with my other cousins, and they've got probably the same amount of siblings that we had, so there was like a lot of people in one house where we first stayed at. Until dad got a job, and my oldest brother had a job as well to provide some cash so he can get our own place. And then, we moved into a three-bedroom house in Rudy Hill, and that's just where I've grown up ever since we came to Australia. And, that's been the start of awesome. Where my life started,
So... 1 year old baby when you left Samoa, and then went to New Zealand for another year or two.
Yeah.
So for how old are you now?
22.
Yeah. So for 20 years of your life, you've lived.
Yeah.
In Rudy Hill.
Yeah.
And that time where you went to move in with other family, how long did that last?
I'm not sure. I think probably lasted for like 3 years until I started primary school. All I remember is we stayed with them, and then when I started primary school, that's when we moved into our house down the road from Rudy Hill.
Okay.
And that's where I started school, and that's where we had our own house and our own like kind of space, but it was still so cramped in there. Six siblings and my mom and dad in a three-bedroom house. So it's pretty crazy.
And you often had other people there as well once you moved with your own family. Did you have other relatives stay with you
not like
the other house?
Not like every day, but every time my auntie or someone came from Samoa, our house was the house to they have to stay in that room, and we'd all get like go down to the sitting room, and that would be where everyone sleeps while family members came over. So
you must have great memories of those times.
It was pretty crazy.
It's a pretty special pretty special thing with us, some old families like that. Is that right?
Yeah. I think that's where the culture and family first always comes from. If one of the older relatives comes over, they get they'll go straight into the main bedroom, and mum and dad would obviously sacrifice to stay in in the sitting room, and just so they can have their own space. So yeah,
it's a lot of respect.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I remember you told me once, I've never forgotten it, that you slept on the lounge room floor.
Yeah,
for a long time, right?
Yeah, yeah. I probably didn't get my own bedroom till I was probably like SG Ball age, 17, 18, when we moved from Rudy Hill to our house in Biddle. Didn't get my own bedroom till then.
And that was when your older brother had moved out.
Yeah, so.
So you got his room.
Yeah, so when my oldest brother moved out, then it's like a ripple effect. So my second brother, third brother, Christian and Nuya got their own bedroom, and then my parents. But ever since my sister got a little bit older, when she hit like 16, 17, she got her own bedroom. So, I was still pushed to the side of the sitting room a bit. And I really didn't mind it. I knew that was always the thing, and I was always used to it. So it wasn't like a burden on me that I was staying in the sitting room and things like that. So, it's good.
So we'll fast forward a little bit. So now you live a life of, you've bought your own home, you've bought the family home. Yep. You're looking after family now, I believe. You live a life going from hotel to hotel, 5-star. Like, do you ever reflect? I know you do, but maybe share it in your own words, because I always see you as one of the most grateful people. But do you ever reflect back on, you slept on the lounge room, living room floor for a long time. You didn't have your own bedroom until you were 17.
Yeah.
Do you ever look back on those times? Or?
Yeah, I always do. I think that's where I always thank my parents a lot. I think it was a massive, massive decision for them to just pack up in the islands and move to New Zealand, move to Australia, and like have nothing, like just come and just try and find somewhere to start. And I think everything that I do now is just always for my parents, always for my family, that that they can have something that they didn't have when we first came over. So that was a massive reason behind buying a house. Like, my parents never owned their own house. They came here and they looked after all of us. My mum especially looked after all six siblings while dad went to work just to make some money. So everything that I do now is for them, and always be like truly grateful for the sacrifices that they had. I know they would have went through dark times trying to provide food for all of us siblings, and I know it'd always be hard. But now with what I've been blessed with the money that I get, I always try and give as much as I can to them, so they'll never have that burden of not having enough, when back then they obviously provided for all of my siblings. So truly grateful, man.
Well done. Well done. I tell you, like you're 22 years old and you've bought your family's home, and you're looking like, is that ever a burden though? Or does that ever, do you ever feel pressure, or it's just in you that you love doing that?
Nah. Yeah, I think it's just what makes me do it is those where I've come from, where I've started.
I love that.
Yeah, man. So like you said, like staying in the living room, like I want everything that my parents went through, I want like my kids, like so they're like, they don't have to go through it. Like, I'm truly grateful for what I went through, because they taught me a lot of lessons and definitely humbled me. So I don't get too ahead of myself from where I started to where I am now. There's no pressure there with like looking after my parents, and I definitely wouldn't be here without them. So the least I can do is provide for them and give them somewhere to stay. And it's good, man.
I love that. I just wanted to hear that in case my kids are listening when I get older and need to look after me.
Of course.
But I just love, you're such a giving person.
Yeah.
Like, the stuff about the area too, like when I first met you, you were already doing stuff, trying to just get down to a local park and help kids with whether it be their training or whatever it be. You're just always encouraging young kids in the area. Well, talk to me about that, because that's pretty unique out here in Western Sydney.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. When it first started, it was like literally like a really small group, like probably like six of us. It was me, my older brother, and like my closest mates that were around my age group. And we trained, and then we started inviting a little bit of the older boys. They seen us training for the preseason, and they came down and we were training, and I think it was Chris Scanlon. He's like, it was someone that brought the idea to us. He's like, oh, why don't we just like post it and like see who comes, like see who comes down and trains. And then we're like, oh yeah, sweet, let's do it. And then we posted it, and the next training we had like 60 kids. That's and we were sad. Like, oh, like I don't know if we should have posted it, because the drills that we were doing was like what we do at like NRL preseason. Yeah, like we're doing like 4 minute runs, and then I was like to my brother, oh, should we just like change this
have some training? Fun.
Yeah, because of like a lot of kids, and we're like, no, just like do it, like, and a lot of those kids just came, and we did the 4 minute run, and we were telling them like it could be hard, but you guys just do what you can, and I was like so surprised. A lot of kids like kept doing the 4 minute run and just didn't stop and just kept running. But yeah, that's kind of where it all started. And then we just kept doing it, thinking when we were younger, we didn't have like NRL players like doing that type of stuff. And we knew there was a massive influence on the kids, like seeing myself, my older brother, got like Bizarre, Romy and that to come down, and like Spencer, most of the Penrith boys, we had Moses and that come down and train with us. And you see those kids that are looking up to become an NRL player, the front rowers that are training, and they see Moses do the 4 minute run and he's like fit. And it was like surprising me that like those kids were like, wow, I want to be like that guy. And yeah. I think, and that's what kept pushing us to keep doing it. Those kids that come and just see us on TV, but we're not like superstars to them. We're like their mates, and they can come up and ask questions when we're training and all things like that, just to help them out. So yeah, it's pretty crazy seeing even the when last year all of our grades won the grand final.
Yeah,
you see like the pictures in that, and like I spotted so many kids that came to our FTA training, and it's pretty crazy. Don't want to like take the credit of doing the off season and they all come into our off season training, but yeah. It's like good to get them started the off season, and good that they had a good year and won the grand final too. So it's crazy, man.
That's so good.
Yeah.
And you're also very giving to the church. You always talk to me about your faith.
Yeah. Faith is a massive thing. I think that was a massive thing of where I am now. It's a testament to my parents, and they pray every day, every night, every Saturday morning, my parents go to the mountain it's in like Fairfield. Yeah, there's like a mountain there, and they go and pray. And sometimes when I don't have a game, they try and like take me to go there and pray. So that definitely keeps me humbled, and remember that everything that I get, it's like it's not a mistake. It's from God, and God has blessed me with this, and yeah, it definitely keeps me in line. So, yeah.
Yeah, because I might go somewhere with you that may interest some people that could be digging deep into their own personal vision in their life and what may happen, what's possible when you're aiming really high. We did that, me and you, once. We went through a little exercise about what could be possible for you and what could get in the way of that happening, and you went through all that, and there's a series of things that we don't really have time to talk about now, but there was an exercise we went through developing your own philosophy and your own vision. But I do remember in and amongst that, I asked you, what will happen, what will you do if something goes wrong? So let's say in your world, things that could go wrong could be injury or what would you do? And I never forget it. You actually wrote down in this little book, or it might have been on my whiteboard at the time. You actually wrote, "Return to my faith if ever anything goes wrong."
Yeah.
That was pretty powerful. Yeah. For even for me to listen to, I was listening to you like you were 19 years old or 20 years old when we did this. And it was powerful, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we also come up with a little
philosophy
like in some words. And I always remember yours. It was without fear.
Yeah.
Where did that come from? What influenced you to a point where you knew that every day, if you could live without fear, that means no fear of other people's opinions, yeah. No fear of people judging you,
yeah.
Being really courageous with your actions, no fear on the field, off the field, how you live, how you provide, like without fear was just you. It wasn't just on the footy field.
Yeah.
Talk to me where that, I think it was from a scripture from the Bible,
it was,
right?
Yeah, yeah, it was from scripture from the Bible. It's Psalms 118:6. It says, I will not fear, what can man do to me? But all of that came from, it was my oldest brother, they gave me the verse. I was like reading, because I read my Bible every game day, and he came over and he was like, because sometimes I sit there, like looking at the Bible, I don't know what to read. So yeah. I was sitting there one time and he walked in, and he's like, oh, what are you reading? I was like, oh, I don't know, I'm just trying to find something that will like help me for the game. And then he just dropped that verse. Like he just dropped it on me. He's like, oh, I'll read that. And then he like left. And I just read into it, and it just made me like reflect on the game and away from footy, about like fearing injury. Like if I do get injured, it's not the end of the world, because I'm not just an NRL player. I've got a family there. I've got other things that I can look at doing if footy doesn't work out. And that was where like do not fear came, and just my mindset going into games, like not fearing the opponent, like they, my potential can actually do if I'm not scared, if I'm not like fearing the other team. And that's probably where it came from. And when we sat down that time, that's where I told you that verse, and I still live by it every day with everything. You know, you could be scared about your next decision, what you do, but if you just do it without fearing, like you do it wholeheartedly, it's just like, oh, yeah, whatever happens, then it happens.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. Even coming in here, there's no fear of these cameras and no fear of spending time with me. Thanks for that. But, yeah, that was powerful, man. But what you just said there was an influence of your brother. He's been a big influence. Could I go there with, because part of that exercise, developing your own unique, authentic philosophy for you, was go through all your influences in your life. Who were some of the others? I remember the brother clearly. Was there any sport people that influenced you, or any lessons you learned along the way that really stick out, or idols you had, or coaches, teachers?
No, I wouldn't know. I think the biggest idols I have are my older brothers. They were like, they probably weren't as fortunate as me and Christian, my two oldest brothers. Because when we first came from New Zealand, they weren't allowed to play sports. Like they weren't allowed to do anything. It was just church. Like my parents told them they're not allowed to do anything on the weekend. You have to go to church and that's it, like that's all. But they were very like talented at sports as well. They were probably more talented than me and Christian. And it wasn't until Christian hit the age of 18 and a coach like watched him play and said, oh, he's got potential to play footy. And my parents like, oh, nah, we would rather put him in church and play in the band than play footy. And something changed my parents' mind and just let him like go into sports. And then, he ended up getting a career out of it. And I was probably like the next in line, like coming through. And my parents were just like, I was like at the age of 15, and my older brothers have never played sport until like, they still don't play sport just because my parents like didn't let them. Then it wasn't until the age of 15 and my parents like let me play. And my two older brothers probably weren't as fortunate as me and Christian. And I think that's the blessings that my parents prayed for. They prayed like they would get a career after it. And
well, that's all part of an amazing journey.
Yeah.
So, well, let's go to your junior sport then. You played multiple sports. I'm a huge believer in just let kids play.
Mm.
Let kids play multiple sports. You are the poster boy of that, brother. I remember, like, there was – I want to hear from you all the sports you played, but I've seen you play, like, we might muck around with AFL.
Mm.
You look like you could play AFL. Yeah. We play soccer. We play basketball. Your basketball is next level. So if any coaches and trainers or parents out there listening, I'd love to hear your junior years, the real big years for a child's athletic development is the multiple sports you play. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, I played like whatever sport I could get into, I just jumped into it. My parents weren't really like strict about a sport. My dad would always, ever since Christian played footy and was good at it, my dad was always leaning towards footy. But when I was younger, like PWSA, like summer sport, whatever sport was there, I just tick it, let's go play. And I was like, I loved every single sport of it. And when it hit like year 7, year 8, year 9, I really got into AFL in year 7, year 8, like playing. I got into like the Giants and stuff, like the junior Giants. So I was playing there and my mum loved AFL more than footy because like AFL, you don't tackle as hard. So she was like more thinking like my safety and that. And my dad was like, nah, he'll grow up and get used to it. So my mum was always leaning to footy and then got a bit older and we would always play basketball on the weekends with the boys. So I started to learn how to play basketball. But yeah, then probably the hardest was year 10, 11 and 12 coming to like senior school. And I had basketball there. I had basketball, AFL and rugby league.
Yeah.
And my parents were like, not arguing, but like saying like, oh, nah, he should try this. Like he should play AFL and try and succeed at AFL. And then my dad was like, oh, nah, he should go and play rugby league.
And your brother was saying, his older brother put him in the NBA, it's more money.
Yeah, and then and I was like, I already knew I didn't want to like play AFL. I just like pushed that to the side. But I was like, I want to just go all out at basketball and footy.
Yeah.
So then 11 and 12 in school, I just like pumped out basketball heaps. Like played basketball and made finals in that for basketball. And I was playing basketball and footy like on our sport days.
Yeah.
So we versed schools and played basketball. Then the next day we'll have a GIO game.
Yeah.
And then on the weekend we'll have a Penrith game. So I was just getting like pumped. But I loved it. And our coach at Benny Harden was like worried like I was playing too much sports. And then I had a decision to make out of basketball and footy. My basketball coach was like telling me that I could get a scholarship for basketball to play Australia Schoolboys for basketball, and I was actually tossing up like to go and play, and then our GIO, the Australia Schoolboys team came out, and I was in the Rugby League Australia Schoolboys team, and that was going to tour to England, and that was the same time the basketball tour was going to go, like for me if I was going to go and play, and I sat down with my parents and I was like, oh, I got like a decision to make, either to go to the basketball tour and try and make something about it, or go and play footy for Australia Schoolboys. And my dad just got up and said, oh, you're going to the Australia Schoolboys Rugby League. And then just walked.
And you said,
and
okay,
I was like, I was like, oh, yeah, sweet then. And then that was kind of like the decision after that. Went to Schoolboys and then just went full out on Rugby League and just play basketball where I can. And
because as you know, when we worked together, I still encourage it. Like one of the best things we did was let's go and buy a ring and put in the gym and play. Like I love, like we used to do a lot of our jumping type activity in and around basketball. And I watched how that grew authentically with you boys.
Yeah.
To a point now I even had a junior team the other week where I got them together just to go play basketball.
Yeah.
And they're a rugby league team.
Yeah.
I got them together to play basketball.
Yeah.
And that's a bit of the influence of knowing how athletic you are. Mm. Were you playing like Division II rugby league like back in the 13s, 14s? What was happening? Which was your club team?
I started like right at the start. I started at Minchinbury. Like I tell the boys, but they're like, oh, no, you're talking crap and that.
Yeah.
My first ever like season, I didn't play a game that year. I was that bad. I played at Minchinbury and it was like almost Div 5.
Yeah.
Like that's how like pretty bad our team was, that we couldn't get a team together. So, and then I was just like mucking around a lot. Like I didn't like take footy serious. Like I didn't think I was good at it either.
Yeah.
I was just like a tall stick and I went to St. Mary's. My parents moved me to St. Mary's because my brother was there.
Yeah.
And then I was playing Div 3, Div 2 there.
Yeah.
And my brother was like, oh, you should actually try and make the Division 1 team as a goal. And I was like, oh, yeah, sweet then. And he was doing Penrith preseason.
Yeah.
So in the preseason. He'll go do preseason and come back and train me in the afternoons.
Yeah.
And then that's when I started to learn the game properly and play. But yeah, I was still like Div 2, Div 3, and couldn't make the Division 1 team. And then a few of the boys left, and then I got some new mates at school, and most of them, they all a few of my white boy mates moved to St. Clair Comets, and I was like, oh yeah, I can't make Div 1 at St. Mary's, so I'll just move to St. Clair and try my best, and then I moved there, and then yeah, I just got selected for Div 1 there, and just started playing with those boys, and we ended up making the grand final and losing to Minchinbury.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of where it all started. So pretty crazy from where I first started to where I end up now. And it's a massive, massive story I try and tell kids these days. I see them get sad and upset that they don't make Harry Matthews, the train on squad for under 15s and that. I didn't even know about those squads when I was that young. I didn't make those Harry Mats until my age for SG Ball. That's when I got called up to Penrith, and even that time I still almost missed my opportunity for that as well.
Because there was an AFL trial that day, nah. I think, was it?
Oh, no, nah, it wasn't an AFL trial, yeah. I was so I didn't have social media, and they put up the Penrith SG Ball team on Facebook, and yeah. My parents didn't have Facebook. I didn't have social media. It was only Christian that knew.
Yeah.
So the first week went by, SG Ball preseason.
I didn't turn up.
No, I didn't turn up. And then my brother's coming home. He's like, "Well, why aren't you going to the Penrith training? You got picked." And I didn't even know.
You didn't know.
Yeah. So then.
Well, there's a lot of things have changed because now you're pretty big on social media, right? Yeah. Wow. Yeah, there's a lot of things have changed. Mate, what a crazy story! And I'm so glad you shared that because I've told kids that feel it's the end of the world if they don't make a team at 15 or 14. And I tell the Steve Crichton story and I think they don't believe me.
Yeah.
Like even my own son, who you know, loves you, man. Like he's spent some really good times with you and he just sees you as this superstar. And he's heard me tell other kids, Steve Crichton, you know, he was playing Division 2. I didn't know Division 4.
Yeah.
And he'll grab me later and say, nah. That's not possible, Dad. Mate. But it really is, and so it kind of brings me now then to. I was in an Origin camp. Were you playing Origin 20s 1 year? Did you play 20s?
Yeah, 20s. Yeah.
Danny Badiris went down to watch the 20s, and he came back. Bedsy knew I was at Penrith, and he said, "Mate, there's a kid from Penrith.
Mm.
If you teach him how to train and be a pro."
Yeah.
Oh my God, the world is at his feet. This was Bedsy saying.
Yeah.
But he said you need to teach him how to work hard.
Yeah.
So then you came out. So that was ringing in my head the first day I saw you. So the first day at Penrith, I don't know if you remember, come straight, made a beeline to you. We did some running or whatever, and I come straight to you, and you're my project brother. And then I saw some things happen. I mean, go back to that four-minute run that you took all the kids through. I saw some things in you that were I kind of had this impression when he said you need to teach him how to work hard, I kind of thought, oh, there's going to be this kid that doesn't work hard.
Yeah.
That's not true.
Mm.
There was a level of toughness in you that now I understand how you grew up and how you lived and how you worked hard and your family's influence. Even now you're telling me how your brother used to go and train you, and there was something I saw when you trained that, hey, there's something special here. Like you were – back then I'd had centres in the game that were usually not that fit. They were – well, everyone's fit to play that game, but the least fit was usually the real fast twitch, powerful athlete that's not really good for the hard work, the endurance, and they would often find themselves centre.
Yeah.
Maybe wing, but then you kind of planted this seed in me. Like we could change a few things how centers play if they're fitter.
Yeah.
And we were like, we want fit centers. We want fit centers. And the beauty was too, you also like fullback. So if you want to be a fullback, you have to be the fittest in the team.
Yeah.
So we were like, well, let's train him like a fullback fitness wise. And then all of a sudden we will have the fittest center in the game. So, but yeah, I saw some things where you embraced hard work. Like you, it looked like you loved hard work. Like I've never seen you shy away from hard work, but now I understand of your background and your history, it explains it. But I have so many good memories of you. I don't know what your memories were when you came in. What was it like when you hit an NRL preseason? What was it like for a kid who grew up like you did?
I didn't hit my first NRL preseason. I already played 5 games of grade. I missed my first NRL preseason because of the Australian schoolboys. I came back and then Benny Harden told me to have a break, and I went to Samoa and seen my grandma and seen my family, and then came back, and then that's when I was still playing cup and then got pushed up. But when I first came to NRL preseason, I just wanted to like learn as much as I could, and we always like spoke about like, if you want to be the best, like you got to beat the best. And like the fittest ever since I started has always been Dill. And like even like some sessions where I didn't train, I just watched Dill. Like he wasn't the best at skills, he wasn't the best at that, but he was like so good at running. Like he was so, like he'll just outrun everyone every time. And that's kind of what I watched. And I knew that I had a bit of skills, but what was like I was pretty bad at was like fitness. But I knew that I could like work hard, and I think ever since like meeting you and learning how to become a fit center and doing the right things, like it's gotten to me where I am now. So shout out to H.
Hey, so many good memories. Well, let's go to the debut then. Like for me that debut, I always remember debuts, because you know why? I love kids that make a debut because it tells me that somewhere in their life they wanted it more than someone else. Yeah. Like it is to this day, and I've worked in professional sport for like 25 years and the highlight of me, I mean there's other highlights like championships or seeing you guys play rep footy or whatever, but debuts are special, man. Debuts are special because there's always a story behind it. Mm. And you usually learn that person's story as well, and a family might come in and give you a jersey or whatever. It's just really special. Your debut against the Sharks in 2019 was a pretty special night, because there was Spencer debuted and there was Birdo debuted. Yeah. Tell me about getting told about your debut and your memories of that game.
Getting told. It was like midweek, and the team, I don't think the team was going too good as well at the time. So I was playing cup, and I was just in the kitchen like eating toast, like always.
Yeah.
I was eating toast, and Ivan walks in and he goes, "Oh, like what are you doing on the weekend?" And I go, "Oh, no, nothing. Just watch the boys play." He goes, "Oh, like, do you want to play?" Like asking, and I was like, "Oh, frick, what kind of question is that? I don't know. Like, I don't know how to answer it."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Oh, like, yeah." And he goes, "Like, oh, are you available? Like, are you available that night?" And I was like, "Oh, yeah, I think so." And he goes, "All right, I'm going to debut that week, that night, and make sure you don't tell anyone." And then like the whole week, I had to keep it a secret the whole week, and I called my parents straight away. They were obviously really emotional. Called my partner at the time as well, and they were like just so emotional, and told my family. But we had to keep it under wraps, and the Sharks team didn't end up finding out until I ran out that I was debuting. So it was pretty crazy.
Was that against Cronulla?
Yeah, Sharks.
I remember it was cold.
It was cold.
We had that because I remember the staff. We had those grey Mark Hughes Foundation beanies.
Yeah, on. Beanies. Yeah.
Yeah, because I have some photos of us after the game.
Yeah, that was the night.
Yeah. Okay, and then 2020, we're playing round one.
Round one.
Which a lot of people think of this as your debut.
Yeah.
You played against the Roosters, were back-to-back premiers, and you come on the field off the bench. Can you talk me? Is that the world's quickest try off the bench? I'm not sure. We should check the stats, man.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, could you tell me your memory
Yeah.
of that? Because everyone remembers that.
Yeah. So, I was on the bench, obviously, and I was just sitting there waiting, and then we hit like the 20 minutes left mark.
Actually, pause. Tuesday, do we have this video? Oh.
Oi.
2-7, 2-7. So you just come on the field. Talk me through this.
Yeah. No, I was on the bench and I heard Ivan through the walkie-talkie, like, oh, get Critter ready. He's going on now. We just got the ball back. So I was waiting on the side there and the boys on the bench is like, oh, go out there and, like, just do your best. Like, go out there, go hard. You got 20 minutes left. So I ran out there and I sprinted straight through the middle because the boys were doing a play already. And then, yeah, that was by the time Nato had the ball passing it to Sauce and I was like, oh, I'm fresh right now, so I just sprint for the try line. So I sprinted straight up the middle and, yeah, Sauce see me and he just kicked it back in. Got the ball, perfect bounce and scored, and some of the boys didn't even know that I was on the field yet until we started celebrating.
What was on the wrist?
My wrist. Oh, yeah.
Pointed straight to the wrist.
Yeah, it said Jesus on it. I think I've learned a lot about giving back and who I represent on the field. And one moment like that where kids will always watch this and I would always get that question, why do you always point at your wrist? And, yeah, it's because it says Jesus and that's who I play for. And that's the reason why I'm out there. So, yeah.
Awesome, mate. Well, my memory of this was that's me there in the background.
Oi.
So my memory of this was Ivan on the radio, get Critter ready, go get, like, make the sub. And then if you watch this, I'm so excited. Have a look.
You knew what was happening.
I meant to get back off the field, but I knew what was happening and I was like, this is best seat in the house. I'm just going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
So I stopped to watch and I saw you and, oh, mate, I was so happy for you, mate. That was such a moment.
Yeah,
the Sauce. Crazy, look, man, at him. Yeah, awesome. So we had some great memories. Your debut was one. That was one. Had some great. That was a great year, 2020, and we ended up learning some lessons. Though grand final loss, that was painful, mate.
Yeah.
It's very hard to explain the pain of a loss of a grand final. But the next year, so many great moments. There's some moments that I miss of you, and I want to go here because people in any industry, they need people with energy in their team. Energy is contagious, either positive or negative. Yeah. Within, let's picture a workforce, let's picture a classroom, let's picture any sporting team, any families. Like, energy is contagious, right? I really miss that about you, man. I haven't spent that time with you for a while now. I see you even when you walk in the door here today, this energy I get when I see you, and there's all these memories, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to bring a couple up that only I filmed. Only I have this.
Yeah, done, done.
Let's go. Let's go.
Seen those videos in ages,
mate. Those were like, we had this thing that year that whoever handles it the best will win. You had to handle a lot that year. Everyone moving families, people making sacrifices. Some people had families there, some people didn't. You're talking from staff to player to everyone. It was such a hectic time, and we all moved.
Yeah,
ends up real special time though.
Yeah, of course,
but it didn't matter how you feel. Doesn't matter if you haven't slept well. Doesn't matter if you're not feeling well. Doesn't matter if there's stress going on in your life. It doesn't matter how you feel. Your job is to bring that energy and you bring it. You bring it. Like, those times, like, what memories does that bring back for you? Like, those were before training, let alone what you bring when we are training and after training.
Yeah.
That was like, what's your memories of that?
Oh.
And do you see that as a responsibility to bring that or that's just natural?
I think, just for that question, I think that's just natural. I think everything that I do, like, whether I'm with someone, like you said, energy is contagious, and I want to leave someone knowing that they had fun, like they that I have that like connection with someone, you know what I mean? So like when it came, like when it comes to like training and stuff, that's just how it normally is. Like that's the, ever since I've never been to another, like I've never been to another club. I haven't sensed what other clubs are like. Ever since I've come into the NRL, our team has always been so young, filled with energy like that. So that's kind of all that I'm used to. And that's still the same how it is right now at training. So it's not like a responsibility. It's not something that you can just like turn on. Like, because when you try and turn it on, it's like too fake. Like it's like,
it's not
real energy. And you can sense that like, oh, you're just doing it for, like you're just doing it for fun. Like you're doing it for the camera, you know. Those times were always the best times, you know. Like
those were the best. There was no cameras there except my phone.
Yeah, so like
those are the best.
Moving away from our families, like it ended up being so special by the end of it. But me and my missus always talk about Sunshine Coast. Like, oh, if only we could relive that moment, you know. Like when we moved there, everyone was like, didn't know what was going on. But like you said, whoever handled it the most, like the best. We had our team there and our bubble, like that's all that mattered. And that's like the boys never complained that time, you know, like the boys never complained. When we went to training, we focused on training. After training, then you can muck around, you know, like muck around as much as you want. But I actually learned a lot of my like my immatureness from Bizza. He's like the main one, you know. I think he's the type of person he is. I've learned so much from him about like not taking like so many things so serious, you know. I think even it still makes me laugh, like before games I try and talk to him serious and like he's cracking jokes to me, like, and it just shows how much like he lives in the moment, you know. He always tells me like, oh, why are you so serious, or like chill out, like have fun, this is what it's all about. Like when you were young, you always wanted to play in a role. We're here, like you're with your best mates, like have fun, like that's all you can do, and whatever happens after that, like we can work with it. But if you're having fun while you're doing it, you're never going to forget these memories. And that's something that Biz has always taught me going into training. He's always mucking around, serious moment, he's always mucking around, like he's just always like having fun. And like people see that about him on social media, the way he acts and the way he is about like with the fans and that, like that's something I really love about Biz, man.
So he always talks, he even just recently in the Origin camp, we talked about still just don't lose that 9-year old.
Exactly.
He loves that. He loves that. So that was leading into this grand final moment.
Mm.
Let's have a look at this grand final moment. We should have the try there. We talk about without fear. Mm. I mean, there's a lot in this try. There was the systems that you followed. There was the reps you've done with, you know, Cam Serrato, the defensive coach. There was a lot of detail in this try, but there was also a lot of critter without fear. Like you couldn't fear not making the play here. Yeah. You just had to follow your gut.
Yeah.
But I'd love to hear it from you. There's more detail in this than anyone knows. It was not lucky, but let's hear it. Tuesday, do you have that try against South? Talk us through that, mate.
So many people like always like talk about that moment, but you and like you see what happens behind the scenes with preparations and with training. And Ciro got like this video. He made this video about that one play. It happened at training, and I was in that same position, and they threw the long ball, and I went to pick it, and I missed it. And like I was so down about myself, and it was a bit earlier on that year at training, I kept getting into that position and missing the play. Like it's either they hit my inside or hit my outside. So I just done so many reps about it, and like funny enough, that same picture that I kept getting wrong at training came in the biggest game, like the biggest game. And me and Ciro always like talk about it, like this is what happens when you do your homework, like.
Yeah.
Like I missed that play so many times, but just with all the homework that I done, like on the biggest stage, like I was in the right spot to make the right play. And every time I watch it, I never think about myself. I think about the coaching, like the coaches that sat me down throughout the whole year, like talking to me, like, no, like you're too far forward. No, you're too far to the right. You're too far to the left. You got to get to that right position.
Yeah.
With all those reps, ended up getting to the right position on the biggest game of my life and picking the right pass. And just still, every time I talk to Sarah about that try, I always give him like all the credit, because without him sitting me down every week, every time I missed that play, I wouldn't have been able to do it on the biggest stage. So, yeah, it's crazy, man.
Well, it pays you back too, though, to work with Ciro, because now he's paying you $1 million a year to go to the Bulldogs. It all works out. That's a great story. There's definitely no fear in that. Then, some other magic moments you've had where you've just backed yourself, like getting Samoa into the World Cup final. I'll never forget that. I was in a pub with my son in England. I'll come to visit and watch you play and stuff. And we'd watch the Aussies the night before, but we couldn't get down to London to watch Samoa v England. So I just said, come on, son, we need to get to this pub. We need to find somewhere that's got the game. Yeah. And we're sitting there. And he says to me, Critter's going to intercept. And then you intercept to score.
Yeah.
Very similar moment. Then the game's tied and I think Samoa had already had a crack at field goal and Owen's going, they've just got to give it a Critter. You've seen him kick field goals, got to give it a Critter. And next, mate, it was like he was a genius commentator. Yeah. And next thing, you kick this field goal to get your country into the World Cup final. Unheard of. Nobody would tip Samoa to make the World Cup final. What was that like?
It was crazy. I think coming off the grand final and then we were only home for like 5 days and then we had to leave straight away to England. So, we got there, jet lag, like straight to training, like did our training and stuff. And we didn't prepare well that first week just because us grand final boys like got there and the team was like a bit like all over the shop with training and things like that. So we didn't prepare the best we could to like put our best foot forward for the first England game. And it showed by the scoreboard. And I think all the boys just sat down and like, oh, like if we really want to have a crack at this, like let's like dial in and do whatever we can to make it as far as we can, as best as we can. So yeah, we sat down, the boys spoke about it. And then after that, the boys just like really went after it, just did whatever they could, like just like fight as hard as you can for the country. And what motivated the boys the most was after each win, we seen the parades, we seen videos of our fans on roads, on cars, on houses, just rooting for us. And that really did motivate the boys and really got them keen to just keep getting better and keep getting further. And the further we got, like we just knew that our country and our people were right behind us the whole way. So it was like a really special year.
You've had some incredible moments and you're still only 22. There's more than 10 years of this left. This is crazy to think. So
hopefully God willing.
Can we do part two in 10 years time, part two of this podcast, because there's another whole journey ahead. Origin, state of origin. Again, another time I was really privileged to be a part of your career. It's something that I'm personally grateful for, but also saying, hey, Critter, get up, get ready, you're going on, because you came on off the bench in Origin for your first debut and you've had some special moments in there. You've experienced winning Origin series with your best mates. Mm. Talk to me about that and refer back to the area again. Yeah. Like it's – I don't think anyone, if you said 10 years ago, there's going to be a group of best mates from this area out here in Western Sydney are going to play together in State of Origin. What is that like?
Yeah, it's crazy. Like you say, from where we first started to where we at now. I think even this year's game three was like really special. Freddie and Fox came up with the idea to get our area, like where we're from, on our chest, on the jersey. So it was good to see the game line up, and you see like Mount Druitt, Rudy Hill, Bidwell, Whalen, and the boys are proud of that, you know, coming from Mount Druitt, not as fortunate, and a lot of kids that have the potential, but now we are the living, like we are the proof that they can make it as well, and to the biggest stage as well, state of origin. So that's always what it's been about, making a pathway for the kids that to make the right choices so they can provide for their family as well. And it's not like it's not too far ahead. Like it's not that far. When I was young, looking at state of origin, I was like, oh, I'd never play there. Like that's like with the best players. But now, with hard work and being humble and like putting your family first and things that really matter to you, putting the right people around you, around your headspace, and that will definitely get you to the right place, and you can go as far as you want.
That's so good, man. I might, if I could, just for 1 or 2 minutes and we'll finish, talk to me about the best leaders you played with. So I want to know, if I just throw the word Nathan Cleary at you, yeah, what do you think of him as a leader? Why he's so good?
Nah, he's the most professional player I've ever worked with, I've ever seen. I've been a part of a lot of teams, but no one would ever beat the work rate, the extras that Nathan puts in. Even with his goal kicking, he goal kicks like after every session. Like he's always the last one on the field, and like that's always been said about Nathan. Like, oh yeah, he's the last one. Like, yeah, what's the big deal? But you look at the biggest games, all of his field goals this year. Like he does that after training when he's tired, and people might think it's a fluke, but he does it after training before Captain John. And I think that's the that's always someone that I've looked up to, and the reason why I do a lot of my extras and things like that is on the biggest game, like you're going to need what you're going to fall back on is your training. And if you haven't done it at training, it's not going to come out on the biggest stage. So I've seen Klez do it at training multiple times, and when the game's on the line and you're throwing the ball to Klez, you know that he's done the work, and I'll back him every day of the week to get the job done. So
awesome. If I mention Isaiah Yeo as a captain, what comes to mind?
Mature, leadership, like you say. I think when we play, he's always the first voice. Like he's always the voice that the boys look to. If we're a bit out of order with our shapes and things, we look at Klez and we look at Yoey, because Yoey locks up our middle a lot, and he is the he is our captain, and he's the most mature. I think in meetings he talks the most as well, and when he talks, the whole room just goes quiet and listens. And I know that he's a massive idol for the locks these days, you know, locks that like ball play and things like that. I think a lot of the younger locks now look up to Yoey, like playing on the biggest stage. Middles that can ball play is a massive thing, so I think they look at Yoey in that sense as well. So he's definitely a leader.
James Tedesco, captain of your Origin team, what comes to mind?
Yeah, like also the same thing, like professionalism, always there and always fit. Like he's, no matter how tired I see him play Origin, no matter how tired he is, he won't miss a beat. And I think that's what I learned about Teddy and the way he plays and the way he wants others to play is like, don't miss the moment. Like you don't want to look back at that moment at the end of the game, and you said, like, and you're thinking to yourself, oh, I should have kept moving. I should have been there for the boys. But that's the type of message that he gets along, like, across to the boys on the field. Like, don't miss a moment. If it's your turn to do something, you do it. If it's your job, you have to do it. If you miss your job, it's just hurting the whole team. So that's a massive lesson that I've learned from Teddy through Origin.
Excellent. Best lesson you've ever learned from a coaching staff member?
Best lesson
that you could share?
Oh, I probably wouldn't.
Do you have a lesson? Do you have a memory of me?
Yeah,
of a lesson.
Oh, probably not like a lesson, but I think everything that you've taught me as a center, I always thought that center is like attacking and defending, and that's all. But I think the things that I do off the ball now, like, it's not on the highlight reels, but I definitely know that it helps our back three. I definitely know that what you've taught us, that pre-season of working off the ball, when the ball moves, like, your job's not done. You don't just stand there. You've got a job to do to get back behind the ball and give an opportunity for another player to get through. That's, like, the biggest lesson I've learned. And think you being gone, I don't try and lose that. Like I try to keep that in my game. I think it's a massive part of my game that I need to keep doing. So
that's good to hear.
Yeah.
That's
so it works.
That's good to hear.
It's not broken. Don't change it, eh?
No, mate. Honestly, like, I don't even know if I'll put that in. I don't like asking a question to talk myself. But I do like that. I still love watching, and I love watching detail that I know how you practice. I know what you value. I love seeing your progress, mate. I love it, mate. I just, you've got big things ahead. You got changes coming your way, but you've still got business to take care of this year. So,
of course,
thanks so much for your time, and you are welcome on this podcast anytime because you just deliver so much inspiration to a lot of people, mate. And you're only 22. Holy, thank you, my man.
Thanks, H. My man. Thank you. Let's go.